Chapter 24. For Better or Worse. Roy's breath froze in his lungs at Ed's words. A bubble of fear lodged in his chest, making his ribs ache and his heart thunder. For a moment, his mind was blank, a slate wiped clean by shock. His gaze swept the area, reassessing it for both threat and promise as he tried to grasp the enormity of what Ed was saying. So much about the Gate of Truth was unknown. Before he had come across Ed and Al, he had always thought it was a metaphor, an easy visualization for the source of energy from which alchemy was derived. There were references to it, of course, vague and indistinct, full of a noir mix of awe and dread. He had dismissed those whispered rumors that he came across in his studies as nothing more than fanciful notions cooked up by alchemists who did not get enough fresh air. Now, with all that was happening to Ed, it was easy to see that those rumors had been grains of truth amongst the dross of ignorance. There had been a gate, and it was a consciousness of sorts. There were times it spoke through Ed's lips and looked through his eyes, ancient and malicious. Yet, back in Central, Roy had found some element of comfort. After all, the gate was in his world, his country, his city. He had the advantage, and it could be beaten. It would be overcome. Never in his life had he thought he would find himself here, the unwilling visitor to a place that had once been the gate's stronghold. Of course, Carmine had put an end to that. There was no portal, no doors to bar the way or wide open. Perhaps this place looked different once, but now it was a nightmarish scene, chilling in its blandness. The air was filled with faint threat, as if there were things dwelling here that wanted them gone. Fog drifted by, thickening to seething dark clouds that stretched from sky to earth in a wall of gloom. No, this was not the gate's place anymore. It had found another sanctuary in Ed. He and Carmine were two halves of a mysterious whole, something that many had struggled and failed to understand. Yet now Ed was here, returning to this wasteland like a compass finding north, and every one of Roy's thoughts was filled with a tense dread. What if, back in Central, the gate had lacked that last bit of strength to overwhelm its host? Here there was energy to spare. The air was rank with it, making his skin crawl and tingle and his body ache as if stretched to capacity. The last time he had felt this way was with a false philosopher's stone on his finger in Ishbal, and that had been just a fraction of the awesome might that filled this plane from one edge to another. Yet Ed's expression was one of repulsion, as though he could barely stand the touch of the atmosphere against his skin. His features were pinched as if every breath left a foul taste in his mouth, and Roy frowned as he realized that the array on Ed's forehead was glowing a sick, vivid violet, bruised dark against his skin. "It's wrong," Ed mumbled, shaking his head and closing his eyes for a second, screwing them up tight like a soldier trying to escape the horrific sights of war. "It's like the whole fucking place is poisoned." "What did it used to be like?" Roy asked, unable to stop the surge of his morbid curiosity. He knew well enough by now that every fact and snippet of information in a battle could mean the difference between victory and defeat. The more he knew about what was hidden away in Ed, the better. He had no wish to be caught unprepared, pushed into a devastating course of action simply because he did not know enough to think of an alternative. Ed looked up at him, a trace of vulnerability flickering across his face before he crushed it, swallowing hard. "When we tried to bring back Mum, I was too scared to notice. I only saw the gate and what was in it. This, he gestured vaguely around them. This used to be bright and misty. The only bad thing was the gate. The rest of it was nothing, like an endless empty room. Even last time I was here, it was nothing like this. Something keened. The cold alien sound reverberated through the air, making it ring with despair. The mist stirred, a swirling curtain that never parted, and Roy felt Ed tense at his side, his body poised to defend against an attack. Hughes had shifted closer and was eyeing the surrounding area with a distrust that mimicked Roy's feelings perfectly. They were not alone, and whatever lurked beyond the veil of fog was stalking them. What's out there? Envy's laughter made Roy jump, and he scowled at the homunculus. The sin still lay on the floor, pinned by the web of power that ensnared him in its strands. He did not struggle, instead lounging in the dust as if he were reclining on a bed. Pain and anger had been wiped from his face, and the sultry smirk was back, curving his lips as he watched the three of them with hungry eyes. You really don't know? His eyes glinted wickedly as he continued. That alchemist woman has been feeding so much pain and hurt into the gate that it began to manifest. Maybe what went through doesn't have a body or a mind anymore, but they've got spirit, and they hate nothing more than people who have what they want. He shifted position, putting his hands behind his head as he relaxed. They'll tear you apart. Literally. Ignore him, Ed snarled. He's probably lying. Why would I bother? Envy purred. Your fear is delicious. Besides, you know it's true. His eyes swept up Ed's body, and there was no mistaking the disgust on the homunculus's face. What's hiding in you is part of the guard that trapped them and used them to feed its own hunger, keeping them from where they deserve to be. I'm going to watch how they give their thanks for centuries of neglect and denial. After all, I've got the best seat in the house. The three of you against who knows how many angry souls. Envy laughed again. No chance. Sulking red lit the fog, flickering like lightning in an otherworldly storm. Gruesome shadows danced across the ground as the gale around them began to switch and twist. Subtle movements within the mist became more vicious and purposeful, making it boil and seethe as if called up by Envy's words. It towered upwards, surrounding them on all sides but keeping its distance, leaving a small circle of clear ground in which they stood as it built itself up to a frothing, thunderous pinnacle. Slowly it began to seep forward, moving with the inexorable flow of an incoming tide. Clots fell from its peak, dissipating in twists of spun-out murk as they plummeted towards the ground, intangible missiles. The leading edge curled around their boots, obscuring the dusty floor from view. Roy could feel the cold damp radiating from the shifting surface. It smelled of old death, like the moist earth of a grave, and there was no denying the breathy moans and whimpers that murmured in his ear, hissing their dire accusations. Slowly, inch by inch, the mist rose and the cloud advanced. Roy cursed in surprised pain as the cold bit into his legs like a steel trap, sinking through flesh and snagging in his bones. Hastily he tried to retreat, backing away from the clinging touch, but the walls of dense haze were pressing in, matching him stride for stride. Like a cresting wave, the cloud began to topple, billowing out as it rolled through the air, consuming everything in its path. It was like falling through thin ice into freezing water, and Roy shuddered as his breath came in stuttering gasps. Tendrils filled his mouth and nose, pressing down on him and robbing him of his senses as he stumbled blindly, trying to find Mace and Ed in the oppressive blanket. The whispers once again grew in volume, becoming shouts and curses as invisible fingers clawed at his jacket, snagging the fabric and trying to drag him deeper. The wound in his side burned torturously, turned deadly cold by the mist that brushed itself against the bare flesh between his lapels. Droplets of moisture condensed against his skin, trickling like tears down his torso as he tried feverishly to pull away from the presence all around him. A massive weight pressed across his shoulders, making his knees buckle as he slumped to the floor. A supplicant before a tyrannical ruler. His breath stuttered in icy gusts in front of him, pure, brilliant white against the black smog of this plain. It would smother him. He knew it, as questing fingers of shadow pried their way between his teeth and coiled down inside his throat, finding their way into his core and clutching at something. Whatever dwelt here in the gate's absence was a vicious thing, not hungry, but filled with a craving for physical form. Opening his eyes, he stared at the mist, lit as it was by the flickering of soundless crimson lightning. It swirled in front of his eyes, and he took another haggard breath, focusing all his strength on lifting his hand from the ground. He had to break free. He had to get away. These things were trying to steal something he could not afford to lose, and he was not going to give it up without a fight. The snap of his fingers was a decisive, punctuating sound in the torrent of voices, and the flames leapt. He had only meant for it to be a warning flash of fire, but as soon as he clicked his fingers, he realized his mistake. Saturated with energy as this place was, the effect was explosive. A column of flame howled upwards, dancing with every hue from crimson and azure to a white-hot heart. It speared through the fog, burning it away as it bloomed outwards against an invisible ceiling, shredding the gloom into tatters. Sweat prickled along his brow as the warmth beat down on his back, disentangling the icy grasp of the shadows as it chased them away. Yet they still lingered nearby, circling like wolves around prey, waiting for its fight to run out. Chitters and whimpers reached his ears, but they were not sounds of fear. It was the sound of starving things being deprived sustenance, laced with a feral fury that chilled him through and through. The flame had punched a hole through the vapor, but all around it was still an impenetrable wall that held Ed and Hughes in its imprisoning grasp. In a moment, the fire died, trailing away to a thread of light before vanishing entirely. There was a moment of breathless anticipation before the fog crashed back, shoving at Roy's back with an impossible weight, forcing him to sprawl on the ground. Grit bit his cheek, and every breath was filled with a parched dust that was at odds with the darkness all around him. Shadows wound through his hair, brushing over his eyes and scratching at his pulse, trying to clutch at the life that still thrummed in his body. He tried to move, but his limbs were dead weight. It felt as though someone was kneeling in the center of his back, holding him there while invisible talons plucked at him, reaching through skin and bone to rip at something intangible deep within his body. The pain was not physical, but it tore at him nonetheless, making his breath sob as he writhed in an effort to escape. A sound like tearing silk filled the air, and light scorched through the fog, carving a single, sweeping circumference through the dust beneath him. He could feel the charge of the alchemy imbued in the simple line, and he blinked stupidly at the periphery. The weight lifted from the middle of his back, thrown aside by an invisible force as the strange sensations that racked his frame fled. Carefully, he lifted his head, trying to see what was happening. A small distance to his left, Hughes lay on his back, blinking blearily up at the indistinct sky. His hair was tousled and his face drawn, as if he had fought a desperate battle and barely escaped as the victor. Another circle charted its way around him, a strong, solid band of gold that gleamed with promise in the dusk. All around the darkness still swarmed, the bodiless voices raised into shouts of anger. The words were unintelligible, a mixture of every language Roy had ever heard and some he had never come across before. Even though he could not tell what was being said, the tone was unmistakable. They were furious at being deprived of two living souls to feast on and two bodies to inhabit. They shrieked and screamed, and vague outlines of furious faces boiled within the mist. Dark hands, emancipated and skeletal, lashed out towards the circles. But every time they touched the edge, the light would bristle with thorns, driving them back. Something changed in the way the mist moved, and it furled in on itself, dragging together into a thick, dark pillar of troubled night. The bland monochrome of the world returned, and the gaping hole yawned menacingly in the distance, a watchful eye on the scene. Ed stood at the foot of the massive column, watching it without blinking. There was no circle to protect him from its wrath, and Roy staggered to his feet. He tried to shout a warning, but his voice was hoarse and dead, worn raw by screams he did not know he had unleashed. Without a thought, he clicked his fingers, only to swear mutely as a few dead sparks fell to the ground. The circle was neutralizing all the alchemy within its border, and he could do nothing to help Ed. Limping forward, he reached out a hesitant hand, pressing his palm down to the invisible interface of power. He was relatively certain that the array was of Ed's creation, a way to protect him and Hughes from the ravages of the wraith-like shades. But even guard dogs could bite those they were meant to keep safe from harm. A faint whisper of sensation flooded up his arm, as warm and soft as a lover's caress. It was an unexpected brush of tenderness in a world of ferocity, and he felt it melt away the last vestiges of lingering chill in his heart. Gently he pushed, but the pressure against his skin increased, a warning for him to stay back within the ring's safe confines. The pillar of blackness drew itself upwards, building into a churning tower of lethal rage. The blank horizons of the plain continued to flicker with blooms of crimson and vermilion, but the color only served to create an eerie backdrop as the fog collapsed, spilling a cloud of poisonous hate in Ed's direction. Thin, snake-like arms wrapped around him, binding him in their embrace as ghostly fingers opened cuts in every exposed piece of flesh they could touch. Roy could see the sweat on Ed's face and the sharp rise and fall of his chest. No one could ever accuse Edward of being a coward, but Roy could pick out the haunted fear on his face. Too many memories of the gate and its atrocities lingered in Ed's mind for him to be untouched by this. But the apprehension was a shallow gloss of emotion that coated a core of unwavering determination. He had a plan, and it was as if he knew the temporary pain and capture was a necessary evil, a means to an end. Cuts sealed almost as soon as they appeared, leaving nothing but a few beads of blood on Ed's skin to mark their presence. His forehead was lined in concentration, and Roy found himself transfixed by the array that rested between Ed's eyes. Before, it had glowed both white and blue, a clean, clear color that seemed to hint at an untainted strength. Now the vicious, violent lines were darkening to black, as clear and concise as ink. Ed bit his lip, closing his eyes. His whole body was tense within the shady bonds as if he was struggling to rein in something wild and steadily losing his grip. Muscles corded and strained beneath his skin, and his cheeks were flushed with febrile heat. Roy could see the knuckles of his left hand were bone white, clenched tight enough that Ed's short nails had to be drawing blood. Suddenly the bonds around Ed fell away. Vapor turned to ash in the blink of an eye. Angry yells became screams of fear and pain as a brilliant seed of light flared outwards, too intense to bear. It crawled in lines through the atmosphere, shaking the air with its strength. The array around Roy hummed in harmony, howling like a dog answering the call of the wild wolf. It was a spark to the powder keg, and the ground shook with unleashed energy, bucking like a bronco and sending Roy sprawling. It was instinct to curl up in a ball, a desperate attempt to protect himself. But nothing reached through the protective circumference. The air at its edge burned and spat, but it still held firm. The hairs on the back of Roy's neck stood on end with the thrill of it, and he shielded his eyes, glancing quickly at Hughes and assuring himself that the man was safe and sound. Whatever happened, Ed would not let them come to harm. With a soft sigh, the light ebbed away, leaving Ed hunkered down, his head bent and his left hand splayed for balance. The shadows were gone, and when Roy looked at the distant horizons, he could see them lingering there, circling like a massive hurricane. They stood in the vast eye of the storm, but already it was beginning to contract, the army of mist marching to rejoin in battle. The array that had pinned Envy in place was gone, and the Sin was nowhere to be seen. Perhaps the mist had taken him, but that seemed unlikely. Somehow he had got away, and Roy had no doubt that he was hiding in the distant shadows, biding his time to strike again. A quiet wail hovered in the air as the protective circles were wiped away, drained of all they had to give by the onslaught. Immediately, Roy stumbled across the line, moving as quickly as he could to Ed's side. The young man's shoulders were heaving as if he had run a marathon, and Roy could see his arms shaking weakly. Kneeling beside him, Roy braced one hand against Ed's shoulder as the other reached out and cupped his jaw, gently tipping his head up as he searched for any sign of injury. It took no more than a second to notice that something was different. Something was wrong. Ed's eyes were wide with a fear that he would normally have kept well hidden, and the grim set of his face had given way to something smoother and more innocent. A shaking hand moved to clutch at his automail shoulder as though the weight was alien to him, and normally graceful movements were clumsy and ungainly.
"Who the hell are you?"
Roy croaked, his voice a hoarse rasp as he tightened his grip, stopping the stranger in Ed's skin from backing away. A presence at his shoulder made him glance up at Hughes, and he saw the gun cocked in the older man's hands. It was pointed at the floor, but all it would take was one quick twitch for that to change to a fatal aim. Looking back, he forced himself to meet the eyes he knew so well and search the alien expression within their depths.
"Where's Ed?"
"He's still here." The voice that spoke had the same clear tone as a child. There was no inflection, no grate or rasp to the words, and Roy scowled, trying to hide the fount of panic that was welling up inside him. "Just weak." A one-shouldered shrug, and Roy realized that the automail arm was probably too heavy to manipulate for someone unused to it. "He used too much alchemy, and the gate is stronger here. If I had not taken his place, then it would have gained control." The amber gaze took on a penetrating quality, and, for a split second, Roy was reminded of Al. There was the same kind of pure intelligence contrasted with an innocent faith in the good of the world. "It would never have relinquished it again, no matter what you did."
"You're not the gate?"
Hughes asked, a frown wrinkling his brow as he shifted his weight. "I am Kaleo." A frisson of shock worked down Roy's spine. Ed had mentioned the name before. A boy king sacrificed to bring the gate into being and forever locked within its grasp. Carmine's son. Beneath his feet, the ground roiled again, twitching and shuddering as the air ignited with colors of flame, more vivid and gruesome than before. The dark tear in the landscape bulged alarmingly, spreading like a cancer. The wind increased, casting dust and grit in all directions as it bore down on them, almost knocking the three of them flat.
"It's starting!"
Kaleo shouted over the noise, wincing as thunderous roars blasted through the air, a storm unlike any other.
"Without the gate, there's nothing to control the energy behind alchemy. Every time a transmutation is performed, it pulls more power into this plane, into your world."
"What do you mean?"
Hughes called back, abandoning the gun in an effort to shield himself from the pummeling gale that swiped at his face.
"What will it do?"
"Rip it apart."
Ed's face was locked into Kaleo's solemn, serious expression.
"All the energy will go to the elements, shaking the earth and scorching the sky. Before the gate, there was only one alchemist, and it took years. Now there are hundreds of alchemists, There's no more than a handful of days before the power overwhelms this place and bursts through.
He glanced at the horizon, his eyes narrowing at the flickering lights and the slow, marching frontier of fog.
It is already affecting your world, seeping through in the cracks. It has to be stopped.
Gold eyes, fierce and desperate, speared Roy through and through.
He has to rebuild the gate. Without it, there will not be an Amstress.
Kaleo's voice softened, reflecting a deep sorrow that no child should have to endure.
Just like there's no Babylon.
Roy shook his head dumbly, too stunned to put together a cohesive train of thought. Kaleo's apocalyptic description was almost impossible to believe, but another heave of the ground beneath him brought the truth crashing home. The air split, racked apart by the sudden gunshot of unreleased power. Jets of light spewed from the darkness, making the air hiss and seethe and burn. With an ear-splitting crack, fine fissures like the strands of a spider's web appeared in the dust. With each tremor that shook the world of the gate, they widened, yawning to reveal a bitter, furious tempest of power beneath a thin veneer of reality. A screech of anger, brutal and coarse, arose from the circling fog, a final, furious battle cry. The thick gloom began to pour inwards, racing over the dusty ground towards them. Wherever it touched, the gaping fault lines in the earth, it would fizz and steam, the featureless souls vanishing in ribbons of sapphire vapor that rose up to the invisible ceiling, cool columns in the hellish panorama. Without a second thought, Roy broke into a sprint, dragging Kaleo in his wake as he trusted Hughes to follow. Automatically, he took the direction that led them away from the slash that bled darkness and agony into the air. Footsteps stumbled and staggered, knocked from their rhythm by the ground's heaving as the mist crashed in from either side, gaining ground with every moment.
"We have to get out of here," Hughes yelled,
his retreating footsteps clumsy.
"Ed used some kind of alchemy to bring us here. Can't you take us back?"
Ed's face turned pale, reflecting Kaleo's fear and uncertainty as he stayed close to Roy, every inch the defenseless child. Armed with Ed's weapon-like body, but unable to tap into any of its strength or power.
"I cannot perform alchemy."
"Why the hell not?"
Mace asked desperately, ducking as the wind began to pick up larger pieces of the fractured earth, slinging them around in its wrath.
"You've got Ed's body. Just clap and get us back to Central before we end up dead."
"It does not work like that."
There was a faint edge of panicky tears in Kaleo's voice, held in check by the same determination to be brave that Ed had shown when he had walked into Roy's office for the very first time.
"It's his body and his spirit, but not his mind. You need all three to perform alchemy. If I let go now, there is no way to promise that it will be Ed who takes my place."
"Shit," Roy spat, his ragged breathing sharpened by the pain in his side and the panic that clotted his chest.
Feverishly, he tried to think, but there was nothing. Nothing he knew that could get them out of this. His expertise was diamond sharp in fire alchemy, but his knowledge beyond that was mediocre at best. Even if he knew what array to use, there was no stable canvas for the design. The cracks in the ground would break it apart before he had even finished, rendering it useless.
"I don't think we have a choice," Hughes gasped, coming to a halt as he struggled to get his breath back. "We can keep running forever and still not get out of here."
"If the gate takes control, he will be no better than Carmine. He will take energy indiscriminately in the effort to defeat her. All that matters to each side of the gate is dominance."
Kaleo bowed Ed's head, ignoring the tendrils of gold hair that fell loose from the braid as he murmured,
"It will be kill or be killed. Can you do what you have to if evil is wearing this face?"
Roy swallowed tightly, not daring to risk a glance at Mace. If anyone other than Ed stood even the faintest chance of destroying the gate, then it would be him. His breath was tight in his chest, choking him with its clutching grip as his heart twisted and broke at the thought. Finally, he found the strength to nod. "I'll do what I can." The words were heavy and dead,
and he could only hope that if the gate took over, Ed was gone. He could not bear the thought of him still being there, behind those eyes, watching everything but powerless to intervene. Kaleo considered him with an ageless expression, suddenly as ancient as the world. To Roy, it felt as though his soul was open to that scrutiny. All his doubts and sins and joys lay bare. Whatever he saw, it seemed the boy was satisfied because he nodded his head once, closing his eyes and falling still as the plain around them roared and writhed, twisting itself apart at the seams. "We're running out of time," Hughes warned, glancing over his shoulder at the fog that was no more than a few hundred paces away and accelerating rapidly, covering great strides of the intervening space between one heartbeat and the next. "We've probably got less than a minute." His voice was firm, slamming his point home as the temperature of the air around them began to plummet, turning icy in front of the racing mist. Seconds ticked away as Roy clenched his fingers, ready to click as his body trembled with the surge and bite of adrenaline. Hugh stepped closer to his side, standing sentry to the threatening gloom as Roy focused all his attention on Edward's body, waiting to see which presence would emerge. There was no expression on the younger alchemist's face, nothing to indicate any kind of conflict, no sign of any kind of life, and Roy felt his heart clench painfully. What was going on? Kaleo had taken control of Ed's body in the time it took to blink, so why was it taking so long? Screams and shrieks pierced the air, an auditory assault as the broom continued forward, thundering like an express train as it bore down on them. He could see the shapes moving out of the corner of his eye, faces howling and fingers reaching out, ready to strip soul from body in one clean slice. "Roy, they're only about 200 paces away," Mace pointed out, his voice cracking with panic, green eyes darting to Ed's motionless face and back to the avalanche of shadow and hatred that raced over the devastating ground. 100. If we're going to get out of here, it needs to be now." Desperately, Roy shifted his focus, clicking his fingers to send a bloom of flame towards the walls of fog. Wherever the fire touched it, the interface shuddered, twisting as if in pain, but it did nothing to stop the advance. By now the air was arctic, and Roy felt every muscle in his body brace for the inevitable moment when they ran out of time. 50. Dank caresses drifted past his face, robbing the life from his skin as the first thin vapors curled around them, manacles of loathing to hold them in place. He clicked again, and again, and again, but they were useless feints in a battle they stood no chance of winning. In a chilling tide, the main body of the fog took them, losing them once more in its featureless veil. Roy struggled to stay standing, to put up some kind of fight, but he was already weakening. The pressure of spite that was all around him gave the disembodied soul strength, and he gritted his teeth against their assault as his legs trembled with the effort of remaining. The last shreds of his hope vanished as the weight slammed into him, buckling his knees. Even in his helpless surrender, he could feel the shadows behind him, raised like a fist to crush him. Water splashed, a shattered crystal sound, and he blinked in disbelief at the murky torrent that swirled around his knees. Hazy vision cleared, and he saw Hugh sitting a little distance away, staring around in shock. It was the sewers. The towering pillars loomed out of the darkness. Impassive. There were no vengeful spirits. There was nothing but solid stone and the silent fangs of the stalactites.
"Fuck, that hurt."
The complaint was hoarse, but there was no mistaking Ed's voice and tone, and Roy huffed out a weak breath of relief as he tried to find the strength to stagger to his feet. A strong hand grabbed his arm, pulling him up and taking the weight on his wounded side without question. With one quick tug, Roy pulled Ed closer, wrapping his arm around him and holding on tight. For once, there were no sarcastic remarks, and Ed's flesh hand slipped under Roy's jacket, a soft stroke of skin on skin that reassured him more than words could. This was warm and real, and Roy nuzzled Ed's temple as he murmured, "I didn't think you were going to come back." Ed lifted his head, letting Roy take a good, hard look at his face. Again and again he checked Ed's features, reassuring himself that this was not some kind of trick. Shadows of worry still flickered in Ed's eyes, and his mouth pulled tight in a grimace as he finally looked away, unable to hold Roy's gaze, as he confessed. "Neither did I." He shrugged both shoulders, automail as firm and sure as that of flesh. "Back there, the gate's too strong. I didn't even realize what it was trying to do until it was too late. If Kaleo hadn't got there first..." He didn't need to finish that sentence, and Roy tightened his arms briefly around Ed's frame, trying to convey his fear and relief in one simple gesture. Hughes cleared his throat, and Roy glanced over, rolling his eyes at the smug expression on his friend's face. "Sorry to interrupt, but I think we need to get out of here. This place is filling up fast." He was right. Water swirled and twisted around Roy's ankles, saturating his boots and soaking up his trouser legs as it rose. "Where did it all come from?" he asked, pulling back from Ed and staring around the cavern. "This place was like a desert. I mean, how long have we been gone?"
"Fuck knows," Ed muttered. "Can you walk, or do you need help?"
Roy touched a hand to the bandage around his waist, wincing at the sharp echo of pain. Too much running and fighting had pulled at the sore flesh, and the bandage was smudged with a dark stain. Ed followed the gesture, his expression snapping into a furious scowl as he took in the shielded evidence of the wound.
"It's not too bad," Roy said, trying to be reassuring. "I can walk at least."
Ed clenched his jaw and nodded, scanning the area for the best way out. Several of the culverts trickled with water, and one or two gushed in a thick torrent of murky fluid, riddled with dead leaves and the sharp white branches of bones. A few remained dry. Roy turned toward the nearest before Ed stopped him. "The water's flowing down, and we want to go up. If the drains are dry, then they don't go to the surface. At least, not in any hurry," Ed pointed out. "Besides, at the rate the water's coming in, we probably don't have long before the sewers begin to flood. We need to be out of here before then." Stepping into the gloom, Roy clicked his fingers and let a small, playful flame bloom from his fingertips. It offered a little light, sending choppy orange reflections skittering across the surface of the fast-flowing stream that flowed around their legs. It was not long before the tunnel began to slope steeply upwards, and the water became a thin veneer as slippery as glass. Roy's breath wheezed in his lungs as he forced his exhausted body on, and Hughes was pale and slumped as if lifting every foot was an effort. Ed seemed physically sound, but Roy saw him press a hand to his head more than once, and he exchanged a worried glance with Mace. The last thing they needed was for Ed to lose his grip on his body again. After what felt like hours, the ground leveled out, and Roy bent at the waist, putting his hands on his knees as he got his breath back. His side ached fiercely, and he longed to lie down. The flame that he left hovering at his side guttered and dimmed in response to his exhaustion. How long had it been since he had last slept? It felt like years, even though it was probably only a few hours ago that he had been lying in bed with Ed safe in his arms. The room in which they stood was one of the sewer's central hubs, with drains radiating away and snaking off into the darkness. Weak light gleamed off of the bricks, turned green with moss and polished by the steady flow of water. Here one culvert gushed in a thick, white-frothed torrent that filled the room with shallow eddies. A sharp current tugged at Roy's feet, sweeping towards one of the other tunnels, and he braced a hand on the wall to stop himself from being dragged away. A sudden roar made the three of them turn to look back the way they had come, and Roy swore softly as he saw the dark gloss of rising water inching its way up the slope, gaining on them second by second. Somewhere in the sewer something must have given way, flooding the lower levels through. Unless they moved quickly, they'd be trapped. Of all the ways to die, drowning had to be one of the worst. and he felt a shudder tear through him. He and Mace might be able to swim for a while, but the weight of Ed's automail would drag him down. Even if they could somehow all stay afloat, they would run out of air eventually, or simply become too tired to carry on. "Quick!" Ed urged firmly, snapping Roy from his morbid thoughts as he grabbed his hand. "If we can't get to the surface this way, then at least it will get us to higher ground." He led them into a tunnel that was almost dry. Only a thin trickle of water dribbled along the bottom, turning the dust to mud. Finally, after what seemed like a lifetime, Roy felt the trickle of fresh air on his face. It was the faintest of breaths, but it swept away the oppressive blanket of weary fear that cocooned him in its grasp. It beckoned them on, scented with rain, guiding them through forks and junctions until they came across the gruesome dam of the creature's nest. He tried to distance himself from what he was climbing over, but one fact lingered in his mind. They were escaping from the sewers with their lives, but some children would never see daylight again. Out there were families that had been shattered apart by one creature's hunger, and nothing he could do could ever bring their children back to them. Guilt conflicted with gratitude that they had all made it out in one piece, tempered by the fact that only a couple of them had escaped without injury. Taking a deep breath of fresh, rain-washed air, he concentrated, forcing the emotion under a mask of professionalism. Some of his men were hurt, and even if he handed this situation off to the authorities, he still needed to remember that he was not just Roy. Here he was Brigadier General Mustang, and it took a massive effort to dredge up the cool, calm demeanor that he seemed to have left behind when they had entered the drains however many hours ago. A steady susurrus was the voice of the rain, and he stared at the cascade of water that fell from the sky. Emergency vehicles were parked in the plaza, their lights gleaming off of the dancing mirrors of deepening puddles. There was more than one ambulance, and several police officers were present, helping the drenched soldiers maintain the perimeter and discussing their next course of action. There was not even a second to relish their freedom as Breida caught sight of them, his broad face softening with temporary relief, before he hurried over, not caring about the rain that saturated his uniform and slicked his short hair to his head. His expression was lined with tense concern, and he stood to attention as Roy managed to ask for a report, trying to get a handle on a situation that felt utterly out of his control. "Hawkeye is still unconscious," Breida said bluntly, focusing on the problems rather than giving any good news. "The paramedics can't wake her up. There's also a kid who is in the sewers. His brother carried him out, but he's getting bad. Can't have much more than an hour."
"Have they tried general antivenom?"
Hughes asked, face tight with the news of another victim.
"No luck, and without knowing anything specific about the poison, they can't do anything. Pumping him full of every antidote available will only kill him faster. Havoc's arm will be fine, and Al's awake, but being kept under observation just in case. Fury and Fallman are standing guard." He jerked a thumb towards one of the waiting ambulances. "There's a paramedic waiting to patch you up, sir."
Roy shook his head, rubbing his fingers at the dull ache that had set up residence in his temples.
"It can wait. We need to do something to help Hawkeye."
"That chimera was created millennia ago, using a snake that's native to Krita," Ed stated, bowing his head in frustration as he shifted restlessly. "Even if the paramedics had the antidote for that particular snake, I doubt it would work against Lamia's poison." He stopped, eyes narrowed and unfocused as he thought. After a moment, he sighed, striding off towards the back of one of the ambulances, as he called over his shoulder, "Get the paramedics to give Hawkeye any anti-paralytic medicine they have with them. It'll give her more time."
"What about the kid?"
Breida called after him, looking back at Roy as Ed just shook his head.
"What good is it to give her more time if we can't do anything with it?"
he asked quietly, his broad face hopeless. Roy patted the man on the shoulder.
"Even an extra minute could give us the time we need to administer the right antidote."
He looked over Breida's shoulder. Two medics stood hopelessly by one of the ambulances, and one of them shrugged and shook his head in answer to a question from Ed, who stepped up into the back of the vehicle.
Hughes, can you check on Hawkeye for me?
Mace followed the direction of his gaze and nodded in understanding. Perhaps he harbored the same fears that made their home in Roy's heart, or perhaps he simply understood his uncertainty. Just because Ed had managed to beat back the gate and take his rightful place in his body, it did not mean he was safe from any further attempts. He was already flagging from the efforts of the hours spent in the sewer, and Roy knew too well that if Ed thought there was anything he could do to save a boy's life, then he would attempt it. Trying not to limp, he followed in Ed's footsteps, pausing at a door. A young boy, 13 at most, lay on the gurney. He was pale and lifeless, the tattered green of his clothes a striking dash of color against the canvas of his skin. His chest was barely moving, and only the faint flutter of his pulse in his neck showed he was alive. Al sat to his left with another boy of similar age to him. A bandage had been wrapped around his head, but he did not seem to be in too much pain. His gray eyes were concentrated on the still body on the bed, and his features were haunted by sadness. Once in a while he would glance up at Ed, who stood to one side, scowling as he tried to think.
"Can you do something or not?"
the older brother snapped, his hair falling in his eyes as he glared at Ed. Fear was making him angry, and he was lashing out in turn.
"You're an alchemist, Russell. If you're so fucking good, why don't you think of something?"
"Brother!" Al's tone was one of reprimand, but it softened considerably as Ed closed his eyes for a second, his tiredness plain. If he could do anything to help Fletcher, he would have by now. Roy leaned against the threshold of the ambulance door, shifting his weight in a vain effort to ease the pain in his side as he raised an eyebrow. So these were the Tringham brothers. Years ago, when he had read Ed's report of Xenotime, he had wished he could meet the boy who had tried to take Ed's place. Now he could see similarities. Not physically, of course. Russell was taller, a fact which probably drove Ed to distraction. And while he may be blonde, that was the only parallel in appearance. No, the common ground lay in the way they behaved. Both of them turned any fear into fury, letting their uncertainty fuel their actions. They were both fiercely protective of their siblings. Even now, Russell was clinging to Fletcher's hand, and Ed kept glancing at Al, assessing him time and again as if he did not trust that his little brother was as well as he seemed. Ed dragged a hand across his forehead, blinking a couple of times before he nodded his head. It was all the apology Russell was going to get, and Roy saw the younger man roll his eyes in anxious aggravation, before leaning back against the ambulance wall with a pained sigh.
"You're the genius. If it was Al, what would you do?"
The look Ed shot Russell was scathing, but he did not snap a reply. Instead, he turned his head to look out of the doors, raising an eyebrow when he saw Roy waiting at the doorway.
"Why aren't you being seen by a paramedic?" he demanded, scowling with something close to genuine anger.
"It can wait," he replied, crossing his arms as he examined Ed's face closely.
"What exactly were you thinking of doing?"
A shrug and a sigh. "I don't know. There's plenty I could try, but nothing that's not a stupid risk. It could kill Fletcher as much as cure him."
"Trying is better than doing nothing,"
Russell snapped, fixing Roy with a suspicious, furious glare as he shifted restlessly, itching for some course of action.
"If we leave him, he dies and that's it. I can't just stand here and watch that happen."
He ran a hand through his hair, turning back to Ed with accusing eyes.
"But then, how could you possibly know what that feels like? You've never had to watch your brother dying."
Ed's jaw went tight, and gold eyes were fierce with genuine anger as he crossed his arms. Roy winced at Russell's words, realizing the boy could not know much about what Ed and Al had been through. If Russell noticed the sudden tautness in the atmosphere, he did not pay it any attention, meeting Ed's angry stare head-on with his chin held high. For a second, Roy thought one or the other of them would throw a punch, but Al's soft, "Brother," was enough to bring Ed up short.
"Fine," he sighed, looking around the inside of the ambulance before grabbing a pen. But if anything goes wrong, it's not my fault.
Convenient, Russell muttered, moving forward to take Fletcher's hand as Ed lifted up the boy's t-shirt and drew one clear circle on his stomach. It was one of the first times Roy had actually seen Ed draw an array, and he narrowed his eyes in concentration as Ed carefully picked out a basic design before looking up at his brother. What are the components of a human body? Al reeled off a list as if he had learned it by rote, encouraged by Ed's occasional nod or addition. It was humbling to hear an existence rendered down to nothing but chemicals, and Roy's heart began to beat with a steady, dull ache as he realized the circumstances that had given them such an intimate knowledge of the composition of human flesh, blood, bone, and nerve. Piece by piece, the array came into being, an intricate knot that made Roy's eyes ache as he tried to take it in. Ed hesitated for a moment before adding another, smaller circle. It was a simple balancing array, an extra level of regulation. It spoke volumes of his uncertainty that he felt the need to chart the design on Fletcher's skin, giving his idea shape with firm pen strokes. Normally there was a clap and flash and it was done, for better or worse. Not this time. Ed knew the value of human life, a lesson learned, and he was not going to take any chances.
A filter? Al asked, watching closely as his brother worked. Will that work?
Ed shrugged, tucking the pen behind his ear as he looked over the design for flaws. You'd better hope so. Is it safe?
Russell glanced up at Roy's question before turning his gaze to Ed again, waiting for his answer.
If it works, it'll get the poison out of Fletcher's body. He should be all right once it's gone, Ed replied, not looking up from the sigils on Fletcher's stomach. Is it safe for you? Roy clarified, examining Ed's face carefully for any sign of deceit. He kept thinking back to Ryder's, where Ed had made Tom's pain his own for a few minutes. That alone had been devastating, weakening Ed phenomenally. Now, more than ever, Ed had to be strong. Now there was something lurking within him with the ability to take over completely if he so much as faltered. Ed looked at him from under his eyelashes, taking a moment or two to consider Roy's question before he nodded. The principle is simple alchemy. If this doesn't work, it's going to be Fletcher who suffers. He looked across at Russell, his expression grim and serious as he asked, Are you sure about this? It's the only choice, Russell whispered, his jaw working as he tried to keep fear at bay. You said so yourself, but if you fuck this up... Ed ignored the other boy's threat, instead snagging some gauze and handing it to Al before he calmly pressed his fingers to the periphery of the array, no sign of his doubts in his movements. He was utterly focused, concentrating on the alchemy as if there was no other concern in the world to fight for his attention. There was no flash or glory. It was almost peaceful, lighting the lines of the array with a faint glow as it softly began to work on Fletcher's body, sending whispering pulses of energy through his skin, down into his bones as it chased out the poison. Watching, the two medics murmured in surprise to see what was happening, fascinated by Ed's actions. Within a few seconds, a faint, glossy sheen began to appear on Fletcher's skin, creating reddened blisters where it touched. Al moved to wipe it away, careful not to get any on his fingers as he did his best to remove the tiny beads of clear fluid from Fletcher before they did too much damage. Almost immediately, the younger boy's breathing deepened, going from ragged and torn to something steadier. Fingers tightened around Russell's hand, and relief was a palpable thing. The medics both jumped into the ambulance, barely giving Ed and Al a chance to get out of their way as they began to take Fletcher's vital signs. We'll get them both to the hospital straight away. We can analyze the poison and get an antidote put together to help your colleague, one said, not bothering to look up from his examination of Fletcher. How long will that take? Roy demanded, stepping back as they reached out to close the doors. The man shrugged. It could be a few hours or a few days. We'll do our best.
Ed snorted in disbelief as the doors slammed shut and the ambulance pulled away, sending spray flying from the wet ground in its haste to get to the hospital. A few days? She doesn't have that long. Without another word, he turned toward the other ambulance, retrieving the pen from its place behind his ear and approaching Hawkeye's side.
You could just let the medics do their job, Roy pointed out, crossing his arms silently as Ed unbuttoned her jacket and blouse before beginning to draw. She has much more time than Fletcher does, and she's bigger. The poison will take longer to do her the same extent of harm.
Carmine knows where we've been, and she knows how powerful I am, Ed said flatly, his words brutal and to the point. The sooner Hawkeye is awake and able to hold a gun, the better. No offense, but the rest of you can't shoot worth a damn compared to her. He nodded to one of the medics to get his attention and pointed to Roy. He needs medical attention. If he says it can wait, ignore him. The others were crowded around the ambulance doors, giving Ed and the medic the space they needed to get to work.
Boss, you sure you know what you're doing?
Havoc asked, staring at the array as it formed. It must have looked utterly incomprehensible and alien to him, and Roy could see how, once, alchemy had been mistaken for something like witchcraft.
How is it going to help?
It worked on the boy who was almost dead. It's just a way of dragging the toxin out of her system. The rest of the healing she does herself. Politely, the medic asked Roy to take off his jacket, removing the bandage with gentle hands before probing the wound. Pain flared, more persistent than before, and he could not suppress a hiss of discomfort as the young man examined the damage to Roy's flesh. Ed looked up sharply, eyes going dead and cold as he took in the damage that Envy had done. It was the kind of wound inflicted by malicious play, not deep enough to strike anything important, but designed to cause as much discomfort as possible. Envy had targeted him with the simple intent of getting to Ed, and from the expression on the younger alchemist's face, it had almost worked. With a minuscule shake of his head, Ed went back to the array, and by the time the medic had cleaned and begun to stitch the slash in Roy's side, Ed's head was already bowed, blocking out the rest of the world as he poured himself into the alchemy, controlling it with enviable ease. The others stood around, tensely vigilant, watching the same procedure on Fletcher had been unnerving. But it was a distanced, distracted concern. This was far closer to home, tight and uncomfortable. Roy found himself torn between observing Ed's face, battered by tiredness, and examining Hawkeye for any sign of improvement. When she finally dragged in a deeper breath, the tension around the ambulance broke like a wave on a paradise shore. Unlike Fletcher, it only took a minute or so for Hawkeye to open her eyes, proving that the toxin had been less effective on her adult frame. Her brown eyes were puzzled and sleepy, but her mind was still sharp, and Roy listened carefully as Havoc filled her in on all he knew. Ed was leaning back against the wall of the ambulance, his head tipped back and his eyes closed. When his brother touched his shoulder, he opened one eye a fraction, giving a faint half-smile of reassurance.
I'm just tired, Al, that's all.
Everyone needs sleep, Hughes said softly, fixing Roy with a pointed glare. If all hell breaks loose now, there isn't a one of us who is in a fit state to fight it. I'll get some cars together. There'll be beds in the dorms if you can't bear to send anyone home. Roy nodded his head, following the paramedic's orders to lie down and wincing as he began to stitch the edges of the wound together. People might sleep better in their own beds, but if Ed was right, and Carmine was on her way, they could not afford to let their guard down. At least at Central Command, there was safety in numbers.
Get to it.
Within the hour, all those who did not need hospital attention were trapezing into the dormitories, too tired for anything but finding their beds. Al had gone to hospital along with Hawkeye and the Tringhams. At first, he had resisted, the need to be by Ed's side too keen. But a look from Ed had been enough to make him see sense. Head injuries were difficult things, and with this trauma following so close on the heels of losing consciousness at the train station, Ed was not about to let his little brother take any chances. Roy limped to one of the doors, fumbling with the key as his shattered mind tried to work clumsy fingers. At least as an officer, he got a room reserved for him in the dorms. Except in a state of emergency, no one else would sleep in there. It was his sanctuary, and right now, he dearly needed the security it had to offer. A cool hand touched the back of his, and he blinked blearily at Ed before stepping back and letting him unlock the door. Propping himself against the wall, he closed his eyes, barely bothering to open them again as Ed got the door open and gently guided him across the threshold. It was a few short paces across the floor to the bed, and he sank into the mattress with a moan of relief. Within seconds, he was on the hazy border of sleep. Strange echoes of sound came back to him, as if over a great distance, and something tugged at his boots, dropping them to the floor with twin hollow thuds. Blankets whispered and sighed as they were dragged up around his shoulders, before the small mattress dipped and Ed's warm, lean body stretched out beside him. He managed a grateful mumble of contentment and turned on his side, slipping a lead-heavy arm around Ed's waist and pinning him close, relishing the feeling of being able to hold him tight and safe. He felt drained and weary, but Ed's proximity was enough to soften the hard edges of exhaustion and erode the jagged thorns of his fears. Even now, in the midst of war, there was time enough for a fragment of peace.